So we are going to continue looking at this series that we've been looking at since we started February. It's a series about living water. We call it H2O. It's a series that comes from a group called City on the Hill that we purchased so that it had an interesting theme to it. We wanted to talk about what we are committing to, this idea of living water. And this has been a sermon series that's really all about words. We've talked about thirsty and how we all have a thirst. We talked about polluted. We talked about how water, as it goes, can sometimes get polluted. We've talked about source, and that makes sense. Water has to have a source. And last week we talked about this category of pure and how water has to be pure if we want people to drink it. And well, this week we get to this word. And I see this word, and I can't help but think about that old Bugs Bunny cartoon. It's the one where he's going through the desert, and he's crawling, and he joined the French Foreign Legion, and he defected, and he's going through the desert, and he's, water, water, I need water. And then as he's going along, all of a sudden he sees the little oasis with the palm trees and the big pool of water in the middle of it, and a pretty young lady bunny sitting there playing a harp, and he goes running for this what he sees, and he dives in, and the water turns to sand, and what he puts in his mouth tastes kind of gross, and he says to himself, oh, it's only a mirage. And that's not the word. The word is mirage. But every time I see the word mirage, I just think of Bugs Bunny in the desert. But you know, that's not really what a mirage is, what he saw. That's called a hallucination. Okay, that's where your brain is getting to the point of dehydration, and it actually starts seeing really unusual things. And so that's a different thing. So the question becomes is what is a mirage? When we hear that word, what's the difference between what our good buddy Bugsy saw and what a real mirage is? And if you look up the scientific definition of a mirage, well, it's an optical illusion caused by atmospheric conditions, especially the appearance of a sheet of water in a desert or on a hot road caused by the refraction of light from the sky by heated air. What? Make it crystal clear what a mirage is, right? Well, let's just make sure you really get what a mirage is. Mirage, well, a mirage is something that appears real or possible, but is not in fact so. A mirage is simply a misleading appearance. But the thing is what's more interesting is what causes a mirage. What causes a mirage is it's a distortion of light. It means that the light that you are seeing is somehow being distorted to make you see things that aren't there. And it can fall into two categories. And this will preach, folks, let me just tell you. There's the idea that it is a distorted reflection. And what happens when you get a distorted reflection is some distant object which allows you to think it is close by when it really isn't. It's kind of like you look at something and you think, well, that's only a few feet away, and really it's miles. Went down to the Nag's Head. This was when my wife and I were still dating, and I was working with youth, and I talked her into going down to Nag's Head with us as a sponsor on a youth group. And she said, yeah, we can go down there as long as one Saturday morning we can get up and we go get some pancakes. I know this really good restaurant down there. She said, it should be in walking distance. I'm like, okay. So, you know, we get up and all the kids are going somewhere else. And I said, on this one day, you guys, y'all are in charge. We're going to get some pancakes. So we went and we walked and we walked and we walked, and we passed the pancake restaurant, but that wasn't the one, and we walked, and we walked, and we walked. I'm like, how far is this thing? She's like, well, it's down next to the pier. I'm like, we're 10 miles from the pier. But she had this idea that just because it said Nag's Head that we were closer, than it was closer to us than it really was. Well, that's what a mirage reflection does. You think it's close by, but it's really not. And then we also have a distorted refraction. And that causes a distant object to be raised above or below normal level, and the object may be seen irregular or fantastic, and it will actually form shapes like those pools of water that you see people talk about in deserts. What's really happened is the land behind it is up, and the sun is refracting off of it, and you think that the refraction, what's really just empty space, becomes a pool of water because of the way the light is refracted. And this is what you talk about when you talk about a mirage. It's light that's not coming through real clearly. You're not able to discern what it's trying to tell you. So that's a physical mirage. This morning we want to talk about a spiritual one.
And yeah, we have our own list of thirst quenchers. I don't know that the list is much different than when Solomon was king. Money, sex, power, basically anything that we think will satisfy us. At best, it satisfies us for a moment, but when it becomes the focus of our life, it can literally destroy us. And Jesus is just waiting for us to accept his free gift of living water. Why would we choose the radiator? But when we refused Jesus, we are not just choosing to be unsatisfied. We are choosing death. You see, Jesus alone offers satisfaction. And drinking his water gives us not just that, but it also gives us eternal life.
This morning, as part of getting ready for this sermon, it was a challenge that was in the pastor's gift that came with the H2O. That if your building happened to be in a place that was high traffic, that before the morning worship service, go to a window where you see the traffic going by and spend about 15 minutes and count the cars that were going by. So I did this. After I made a few quick phone calls this morning because I was worried about some people that I thought were supposed to be here. They weren't. I decided to go to this front window that's right here on that little room and just stand there and watch the traffic go by. I only stood there for about 10 minutes. You know, over 100 cars passed by. Not only 100 cars, but as you looked off over here, there was a father and a son standing out in the park playing this morning. You could see on the silhouettes and the people running around this thing that goes around that little pond, there were people out there running. And the funny thing is, all these people were going somewhere. Now, out of 100 cars, I got a feeling that a few of them were probably headed for church. Hopefully one of them, since it was a church van and it had the name of a church on the side of it. I'm assuming they were headed for church. But a lot of those people, you could just look at them and say they definitely, church wasn't even on their mind. They were different shapes and different sizes and different color people in the cars. Some of them were talking on their cell phones as they sped up to the light and made a quick stop because they realized the light is actually red. Some of them just were blowing by, and there just weren't very many people that stopped to take a look at me as I was looking at them. They were focused on something else. And that's the danger in chasing these mirages. In the video we just looked at, Carl Eidemann talks about this guy named Solomon. And Solomon was, well, he was probably the world's most famous mirage chaser. He spent his entire life chasing mirages that were out there trying to quench his thirst. And then he gets to the end of his life and he decides to write his memoirs or write a diary or whatever you want to call the book in the book of Ecclesiastes. And he tells us about these mirages. He tells us this wisdom, this idea that you can stuff your head full of knowledge and quench your thirst. He says in chapter 1, it's meaningless. And this is important because Solomon was deemed the wisest man to ever live. And he says, you know what? All of that common sense, all of that discernment, that in and of itself is meaningless. Pleasure? Come on, it's getting warmer. We're going to have our church ups and downs. You know how they go. People are going to be up to the mountains and down to the beach. That's how churches work. Pleasure, those things that we do just to give us that moment of experience, that distraction, whatever it is, in the long run, it's meaningless. It doesn't give us that eternal fix that we're looking for. Toil and work, it's meaningless. I have a running joke that I share with my boss and with anybody else that still wants to hear it about work. If I take potato chips and leave them on my desk, somebody steals them. If I leave change on my desk, somebody steals that. If I leave work on my desk, Nobody steals it. So my conclusion is, obviously work is not as valuable as potato chips and change, right? Because if it was, they'd steal it, right? You know, in the end, we can spend all of our days working and toiling and putting in all these hours and climbing the ladder and using the rungs and all the little sayings that we have for making a career. But you know what? At the end of the day, that's what your life was about. It's meaningless. You know, ambition. Now, I want to tell you something. I'm an ambitious little individual. I can be. I have visions sometimes and dreams, and I'm a go-getter. You can ask people. I'm a gas pedal kind of person. Sometimes I can lose sight of what's around me by being focused on the goal that's in front of me. I can do it. I can. I can be ambitious. But, you know, if my ambition begins to overtake me to the point that I forget about people, and the accomplishment becomes more important than the way that I accomplish it. And if the ends begin to justify the means, then Solomon tells us, you know what, if that's how you live your life, it's going to be meaningless. And you know what the thing is we bought into this riches, money, the house, the cars, the things, the 2.5 kids and the dogs and all the things that we think makes up the American dream. I still ain't figured out how you get 0.5 kids. But that's what they say. The American dream is to have 2.5 kids. I don't want the half a kid, thank you. I'm good. I have two. But I guess they're averaging out, and so they take and they have a half a kid left over. Anyway. But all of the stuff that you accumulate trying to make your life worthwhile, Solomon tells us, been there, done that. I have acquired everything. My treasure trove is full. I've got more gold than you can look at. And you know what he ended up saying? He looked at his great big vault that was probably bigger than Scrooge McDuck's, and he said, it's meaningless. It brings me nothing in the end. You see, all of these things, they are a mirage. They are a reflection of, we think it's close by. We think that it's right there in front of me. And if I can just reach out and grab that, then this thirst that I have will go away. But we've all experienced, once you get that thing that you thought was close by and your thirst was supposed to be quenched, it's just like eating sand. And really, you just end up thirsty for the next little thing that's right there in front of you, and you reach out to grab that, and that doesn't work. You know, this movie came out a few years ago called Pirates of the Caribbean, The Black Pearl, The Quest for the Black Pearl. And it had these pirates that on it that were cursed. They had stolen some cursed gold. And these pirates, their curse was they were supposed to live forever. They could not ever die. Oh, that sounds great. Except for the problem is that they could never eat or drink. Anything that they touched, as soon as they brought it up to their mouth, it turned to dust. And anytime they drank water, it literally became dust right inside of them. And so they were cursed to live their entire existence with this unquenchable thirst and this need for food. And then anything that they touched never satisfied it. And so the goal of these pirates were not to experience what they wanted to experience anymore. They simply were just looking for a way to remove the curse, to gather back all that they had stolen and take it back so that they could be free of the curse. And if you think back to the Garden of Eden, God delivered a curse because of what Adam had decided to do. And so we are people now that are living much like those pirates. We're trying to undo God's curse by these mirages. And it's just not working. Because you know what? I'm still thirsty. As a matter of fact, Solomon uses these words to describe what you're doing. He calls it vanity and chasing after the wind. Vanity is the lack of real value, hollowness, worthlessness. I get it, and I think I'm going to be satisfied with it, but it just turns to dust right in my possession. Chasing the wind is unattainable. Have you ever tried to catch the wind? I remember the old AT&T commercial when they first were doing the wireless communication. A little kid runs up to the mountain with the jar and does this and tries to catch the wind, and he closes the jar and he takes it back to his grandpa, and the grandpa opens it and just blows. It doesn't work like that. You can't catch the wind. You can chase it all day long, but it's unattainable. It can't be done. And if you're trying to quench your thirst with one of those life mirages, let me just save you some trouble. It's not going to work. Matter of fact, Solomon came to this really simple conclusion by the time he was at the end of his life. His conclusion was, the real living water, the thing that will satisfy, is to fear God and keep his commands. To get off the meaningless treadmill and start trying to acquire my satisfaction through my own efforts. Stop mopping the floor and start relying on God. Now, there's another character, and this is a character we want to talk about also, because he also experienced a mirage. His name is Nicodemus. Now, this isn't our first trip with Nicodemus. We all know who Nicodemus is. If you've been at church any length of time, you know who Nicodemus is. He is the Pharisee that went to Jesus by night in John chapter 3, and that's where we're going to be. If you have your copy of God's Word, you can head that way, because we're going to be there for the remainder of the sermon here. But Nicodemus also saw a mirage, but unlike Solomon's mirage that was more of a reflection, he thought it was right there at him, and it wasn't. Nicodemus's was more of a refraction. In other words, he looked at it and thought, oh wow, this is here, what I'm looking at is there, but it really wasn't. He was looking off in the distance too far, and he missed the point of what was right there in front of him. So this morning, I want to start off by talking about what was he looking at. This is verses 1 and 2. Now there was a Pharisee, a man named Nicodemus, who was a member of the Jewish ruling council. He came to Jesus at night and said, Rabbi, we know that you are a teacher who has come from God. No one could perform the signs you're doing if God were not with him. So Nicodemus looked at Jesus and he saw something. He saw something tangible. Remember, Nicodemus was a Pharisee. And I think he was probably a good Pharisee. I know there were some Pharisees that got ragged on all through the New Testament. And Jesus really had not much use for the Pharisees. But Nicodemus, I think, was a good Pharisee. He honestly wanted to have a relationship with God. He was on the ruling council. He was a person that became a part of Jesus' ministry. But in Nicodemus' mirage, he was trying to reconcile what he was seeing and hearing Jesus with what he thought was to be true. Nicodemus had religion. He had it in spades. He believed in what God had said through the Old Testament, and he was keeping the laws as best as he could. And now here comes this Jesus character, and Jesus is telling him, all that stuff that you were doing, you've missed the point if you thought what you were doing was what you were supposed to be doing just to get into heaven. He says, you know what? You have to look at something else. And so Nicodemus comes to Jesus, and he says, Rabbi, I know you're from God. I get it. I see it. But you know what? As he continued, well, Jesus had to give him something new to look at. He had to throw something out there at Nicodemus. He had to throw Nicodemus this huge curveball, because Nicodemus didn't ask for this. Nicodemus wasn't into a theological discussion. But right there in verse 3, Jesus tells him, Jesus replied, very truly I tell you, no one can see the kingdom of God unless they are born again. Say what? Nicodemus was probably looking at Jesus and saying, come on, I just came here because I wanted you to verify that you're from God. I wanted you to assure me that what is out there is real. And now, what do you mean born again? What are you trying to tell me here, Jesus? What is it that you're trying to say when you say no one can enter the kingdom of heaven? And the thing is that, well, Nicodemus, he just can't see it. Verse 4, how can someone be born when they are old? Nicodemus asked. Surely they cannot enter a second time into their mother's womb to be born. And all the ladies are like, yep, you're right about that one. One chance only. You're not coming back here when you're old enough. We're not doing this. We don't give birth to fully born humans. We do babies. There's a reason. They're smaller. Okay? I can't do that again, Jesus. I can't go back that far. I can't go to my mom and say, I need to be born a second time. Jesus, what are you doing to me here? You see what Nicodemus is doing? He's focused purely on the physical. He's trying to solve Jesus' riddle by trying to purely think, how can I accomplish the task? It's like me with the mop. If I just mop long enough, this couple inches of water that's all around me will work. It's like Mickey with the mops that just kept multiplying. That just doesn't work because it just wasn't going to be there. That's what we think about because Nicodemus just can't see it. So Jesus has to take a second pass at this. He has to refocus Nicodemus. This is what verse 5 and through 8 say. Jesus answered, "Very truly I tell you, no one can enter the kingdom of God unless they are born of water and the Spirit. Flesh gives birth to flesh, but the Spirit gives birth to spirit. You should not be surprised at my saying, you must be born again. The wind blows wherever it pleases. You hear its sound, but you cannot tell where it comes from or where it is going. So it is with everyone born of the Spirit." Jesus really, really, really wants Nicodemus to understand. Nicodemus, this relationship thing with me, it isn't about what you do. You know what? You could haul a whole herd of cattle into the temple and you could slaughter all of them. And if all you're doing is just hauling cattle, then all you're doing is making beef. Because it really isn't about what you do. It isn't there. You know what, Nicodemus? It isn't about what you know. You can't take what I'm about to tell you and just fit it into this little perfect mold and say, you know what, it's about what you know. If I can just learn enough about God, if I can just understand God. You ever tried to understand God? Sit down for just a little bit and try pondering the Trinity for just a little while. It'll give you a headache. One God, three persons, or personages, or whatever they want to call it. It'll blow your mind. You want to sit down and try to ponder God, try to ponder a being that has no beginning and no end. I can't do it. My head doesn't stretch that far. I get headaches trying to answer those things. Try to think about a God that loved me so much that he would come and give his own life for me. Wouldn't it have been easier just to start over? But see, we can't fathom God, and Nicodemus thought he had it all figured out. You see, Jesus tells Nicodemus it's about being born in the Spirit. What is it Jesus after when he says that you're going to be born in the Spirit? Well, you see, Nicodemus understood what it meant to be fleshly born. He did. He got it. Because he understood it because Jesus, he told Jesus, I can't go do that one again. That was a one-time only deal. But this born in the Spirit, this is something new for Nicodemus. He had never probably heard that term his entire life. Keep in mind, at this point, the Holy Spirit came and went on people as it pleased. You read in the Old Testament, it came upon Samson, he grew strong, it went away, he grew weak. Read about David, it came and David was great, and when it left, David wasn't so good anymore. David actually begged, "Don't remove your spirit from me, God." So when you talk about somebody being born into the Spirit, it means, you know what? You are now of the Spirit. You're going to be with God forever. God is going to be part of your life. It isn't going to be this coming and going. It's going to be this constant flow between the two. And Nicodemus, I got to get you to that point. And well, Nicodemus' mind, he's got that same throbbing headache that I get. He simply says in verse 8, how can this be? Jesus, do you understand what you're saying to me? You've just blown my entire theory here. I have been walking my life through this desert, going from place to place, acquiring God's laws and learning God's understanding and doing all of this stuff, and now you're telling me it's all a mirage? This isn't the way to God? Well, he doesn't totally throw out all of it, because understand the Old Testament, the entire purpose of the Old Testament was to paint a picture of what Jesus was supposed to be like. The sacrificial system that he put in the temple painted a picture of the sacrifice that had to be made on the cross. The idea of the prophets and all the messages out there was to set aside Israel so that Jesus could be born in Israel, and so that Jesus could be born in a nation that was set apart for God, so that all of the Old Testament would be fulfilled. It was to prove God's plan, but it was not the plan. See, that's hard for us to move on from. Even in the church, because you know what? We get into church and we're thinking it's all about what we're doing and all about what we know and all of that kind of stuff. And Jesus is saying, you know what? Don't get so focused on that, folks. Because you know what? Let me just clue you in on something. Church, man, you're going to hate me saying this. It can sometimes be a mirage. You can be looking at the church in and of itself to quench your thirst, and you can do all the churchy things, and you can become very, very churchy, and you can be in the church every time the doors are open, and then you go home and your life is just as empty as it always was, because believe it or not, church can become the mirage. We think just because we've got church, we've got God, well, that's where Nicodemus was. He thought just because he was Jewish, he had God. And so I guess we have to ask the question. I forgot to flip my slide there. What did he miss? Actually, I think I've left the slide out. I did. Okay, here we go. I got the wrong caption up there. What did he miss? Well, this is what Jesus said in verses 10 and 11. By the way, I'm looking forward to next week when the TV's up there working. I don't have to look back here. I can just look at you and keep looking at your smiley faces. Okay. What did he miss? You are Israel's teacher, said Jesus, and you do not understand these things. Very truly I tell you, we speak of what we know, and we testify to what we have seen, but still people do not accept our testimony. See, here's what Jesus is trying to explain to Nicodemus. Standing in front of Nicodemus was not a rabbi. It was the Messiah. See, when Nicodemus came in and addressed Jesus, he called him rabbi. Wrong term. Teacher is what that means. He should have said Messiah. Chosen one. Offering him rebirth was not a man from God. That's how he addressed him, right? Rabbi, we know you're from God. Oh, no. This was God in human form. That's a big deal. That's a huge deal. He was staring at his mirage, and he missed the obvious testimony. He was staring at the mirage of who Jesus was, and he missed the obvious testimony of what Jesus' ministry was saying. A new day is here. The old ways that you've been doing things have passed away. It is time for you to focus on a relationship through me. That's what he's saying to me. And I guess we have to ask ourselves, and Jesus states it clearly, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whosoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. Jesus didn't leave much doubt in what he was here to do, did he? He said, for God so loved the world that he gave me, he sent me, so that I could teach you what it means to have a relationship with God himself. Not with the temple. Not with a priest. Not with the church, not with a job, not with your possessions, not with all the things that you think are going to fulfill your life. I want to teach you how to have a relationship with me. And if you don't want to have that relationship, you know what? You're going to perish. That eternal thirst that you have is never going to be filled. And then Jesus tells him, but I want you to understand, I'm not here to condemn you. I love that about Jesus. He didn't come here so that he could tell us all the things that we did wrong, all the ways that it got messed up, all the complicated little I's and I's we didn't dot and T's that we didn't cross. He didn't come here for that. He said, you know what? I just simply came here to save the world, to put it back like it should be. That's the real water, isn't it? And if that isn't what you're looking at, everything else, that's the mirage. Those are the things that we chase. So this morning, I don't want you to miss the obvious. A lot of times we stop in John chapter 3. We like to stop right after verse 17. Did you know there's a lot more verses there? This is what it says in 20 and 21. Everyone who does evil hates light. Remember what a mirage was? It was a distortion of light. And will not come into the light for fear that the deeds will be exposed. So Jesus starts off with this idea that, you know what? If you like the mirage, if you like the distortion, and you want to live for the mirage, if you want to live there, then you know what? You're going to stay there. If that becomes your focus, you're going to stay right there because you don't want anybody to expose you for what you are. But then he gives the reverse side of the coin. But whoever lives by truth comes into the light so that it may be seen plainly that what they have done has been done in the sight of God. Jesus didn't want us living in a mirage. He didn't want us eating sand. He didn't desire for our lives to be one disappointment after the other. Could you imagine that? I have never been trapped in the desert and don't ever plan on being. Of course, I wasn't planning on being trapped in Dayton and that happened. But I never planned on being trapped in the desert. But I could not imagine going through the desert and being so thirsty and think I finally found water and it's just another pile of sand, which I already have plenty of. Jesus doesn't want us to live our life that way, but to do that, you're going to have to refocus your life. And that ain't easy. Because I want to tell you, as you walk through your life, there are tons of mirages. They are everywhere. Satan builds wonderful mirages so that you can look at them and say, oh, I'll go this way. Or, oh, I'll go this way. Or, oh, doesn't that look like it'll satisfy me? Or, oh, doesn't this look like it'll fix my problem? Satan runs an eternal, I guess, commercial channel. He's like, look at all the things. If for only $19.99, I can quench your thirst. And you know what the sad thing is? We're dialing up with our credit card and say, dial me in because it's not working. And Jesus is saying, you know what? You got to take your eyes off of the mirages. You almost kind of have to walk through life a little bit with your eyes shut sometimes, because there's so much going on around you that you'll chase it. Think about Solomon. He was a man that was the wisest man that ever lived. What a term to have on your tombstone. Wisest man that ever walked on the planet. And Solomon says, you know what? All that wisdom, meaningless. If I had just kept my focus on God and not all the things around me, the mirages, then you know what? I would have had a much better life. Maybe we need to take a lesson. We're going to do a time of decision, and I want you to ponder this idea. What are you chasing in your life? I've already figured it out. I've messed up the slides, and so I've messed up your notes. That's okay. We'll sort them out later. I realize I've done that, and maybe that's kind of the point. Are you just chasing one thing or the other? I want you to hear this loud and clear. What are you looking for in your life? What are you counting on to quench your thirst? Is it God? Or have you maybe invested in the mirage? And you know what? You keep pouring money into the hole, and all you get out of it is sand. Maybe today, during this time of decision, it is time for you to change what you're looking at. Begin to think about, you know what? I need to invest my life in God, in my relationship with Christ, and see if that works. Let me challenge you to think about that, because you know what? If you've never tried it, then maybe it's the one thing you've never tried, and maybe that's the reason you're still seeking all the other mirages. Maybe you're here today and you know what? You're lost in the desert. You've never experienced Jesus. Come on forward. We'll lead you to that true living water that isn't a fake. It's real. And I promise you, if you let it be part of your life, it will quench that thirst. Would you please stand? We're going to pray.